This podcast is brought to you by WEDI, the preeminent national membership association for health IT guidance and collaboration. Recognized and trusted as a formal advisor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, WEDI is the leading authority on the use of health IT to efficiently improve health information exchange, enhance care quality, and reduce cost. To learn more about WEDI member benefits and educational offerings, please visit our website, wedi.org. Welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT, a WEDI podcast. Hi everyone, Michael McNutt with WEDI. During the COVID-19 pandemic, many patient-facing digital self-triage tools were designed and deployed to alleviate the demand for on-site triage in hospitals and physician offices by providing a way for people to self-assess their health status and get advice on whether to seek care. The tools provided via website, apps, or patient portals or more are still being used to this day and have improved the patient experience by not only helping redefine and enhance patient engagement, but also streamlining patient flow. To discuss how digital self-triage technology can drive more efficient, patient-centered care and reduce unnecessary burdens that impede the patient experience, today I'm welcoming Amanda Burry, Chief Commercial Officer for Informedica, to the podcast. Amanda, welcome to the Collective Voice of Health IT.
Thank you for having me, Michael. I'm excited to be here today and talk about all things digital health.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, first, let's talk a little bit about you. What are those motivations, inspirations, and aspirations that brought you to healthcare?
Yeah, so my healthcare journey started when I was really young. I was lucky enough to grow up around the business of healthcare. So my mom ran a medical billing service from our home for 28 years. Wow. So she worked with over 70 anesthesiologists in the Chicago area, handling all of their medical billing, which was done very analog and very physical during that time. She started it in 1988, sold it off in the early 2000s, and then went into the pain management and radiology imaging side of the business. So this idea of healthcare operational processes has really been in my blood since a very young age.
I have to ask, what's her view of this evolution of electronic digital interchange, interoperability? It must just be like watching flying cars for her, like you said, a very analog way of thinking. And now it's, you know, we're talking about artificial intelligence, you know, and digital interoperability. So do you ever bring it up, or does she ever bring it up like, oh my goodness, like, wow, what an incredible world.
Yeah. Well, we have many healthcare conversations between her and I, go to her for a lot of advice around different needs that patients have that they still aren't getting today. And so, fun fact, I tried to get my mom to be my first digital healthcare client in 2006 when I was working for a company called Reach Local, and we were doing Google AdWords, SEO. This was kind of at the forefront of businesses moving from offline to online in terms of marketing and advertising. And I said, Mom, can we get one of your businesses up on the platform? I think if we put them at the top of Google for imaging services, we could start to get some new phone calls. And she said, Amanda, this whole business is referral based. Nobody is ever going to Google that they need some sort of healthcare solution. I will sponsor you in a business endeavor. So if you need money, let me know. But I don't think this is going to work. And I said, please just give me 3 months. I was hard selling my mother. Please just give me 3 months to let me prove it. And in the first month, they had 79 phone calls with 24 new patients that didn't even know they existed that needed different imaging service, whether it be a CT scan, MRI, maybe a mammography. And so from there, it just really piqued my interest that in this new world of Google and digital, that this healthcare industry could transition and could start to transform to more of online services versus the very analog and offline workflows we were all used to for much of the time, before kind of the mid to late 2000s.
Now, before we go deeper, and I definitely want to ask about Informedica, and then we'll go into the self-triage, but you mentioned something like, why do you think, you've been around a bit, you've seen this kind of from your mom, you've seen this move from analog to digital, why has healthcare been so slow and hesitant to adopt emerging technology and kind of take that quantum leap that online shopping and, you know, like purchasing. I remembered I have when I had to book a hotel by simply calling and waiting and making the reservation, and now I can simply do it on my phone. Why has healthcare been so slow to adopt these unique technologies and moved beyond? You know, there's still people talking about faxing. You know, there's still people living in an analog and very used to and very comfortable with it regarding healthcare. Why hasn't healthcare made that turn?
I think there's two sides to the maybe slow progress that we talk about in healthcare. There is the consumer side or the patient side, which, you know, booking a hotel or buying something on Amazon is low risk. We're talking about our bodies, our livelihoods, our health, something that is very personal to us, something that is has a much higher risk to it. You know, going and finding a doctor online and like crossing our fingers that we're walking to an office of accredited medical professional is much higher risk than purchasing a spatula off Amazon, right? So you have consumers that are trepidatious as it relates to potentially using those new technologies. And on the other side of the coin, we have these large health systems, a lot of regulatory, some are, you know, funded in various activities. And then you have the insurance arm of it, just the complexities that come along with, you know, providers and their contracts and the hospital's contract and the insurance part of it and who covers what. It just really stems to, it is not as easy as flipping, you know, on a switch and selling kitchenwares or, you know, a tank top on Amazon as it might be to finding and seeking the care that you need within the treatment parameters that are acceptable to you as a patient.
No, and I think lately patients have taken a lot more control of their patient data and thus having that kind of ownership. Whereas in the past, even I could recall, I would just make an appointment and show up. And now it's like, no, I'm going to review my portal. I'm going to review my EMR. I'm going to review all this stuff because this kind of ownership of your information is something that's been relatively new for a lot of folks. And thankfully, regulations have allowed more access to that. You talked about complexity of the healthcare system. So let's talk about how Informatica is working to kind of, you know, separate all the healthcare mess and confusion. Tell me a little about Informatica and what they're doing to help healthcare.
Of course. So Informatica, we have over 11 years of R&D, and we are the market leading AI powered, you know, patient engagement tool, whether that is for health systems, payers, government health plans, really providing clinically validated navigation to help guide those patients towards the most appropriate and cost-effective care. We really focus on this trusted AI factor, which we've been working on, like I said, for the last 11 years with over 100 customers and partners globally, really making sure that we're looking at the financial outcomes for the patients, but also ensuring that with the over 17 million completed interviews that we've had to date, that we're providing those patients the most appropriate cost-effective care configured to either their plan or benefits that they might have. So taking it a step further and not just search match, this is where I go, but learning a little bit more about the patient and their symptoms and their conditions and maybe some of the medications they might be taking and the plan benefits they have, to then connect them and triage them to that right level of care endpoint.
Excellent. Now let's talk about the triage experience and let's talk about patient engagement and the patient experience. Engagement is huge. Patients, you know, time is short. Healthcare visits can sometimes be stressful for folks. And doctor's interaction time has always been kind of, you know, highlighted as being too short in the patient's experience, even in the provider's experience, the physician's experience. How does digital self-triage help the patient and doctor in terms of the data and engagement captured? Walk us through that process.
Yeah. So we'll start off by saying, you know, how are we looking at this care pathway differently? We know 57% of patients have actually gone to a doctor's appointment only to discover that that provider was not the right one for their condition. And on the flip side of that, 24% of providers report that they see new patients that don't fit their specialty. So right off the bat, we're starting off on the wrong foot. Mm-hmm. And so we look at AI as a tool to change this and revolutionize the care delivery. So through our process and through the technology that we have, we're looking at routing those patients based on a health assessment survey, let's say, that they're taking that uses AI underpinning as well as third-party clinical data to really understand and help support that informed decision-making process. So, Michael, let's say it's 11 o'clock at night, you don't feel well, your ear is ringing, it's kind of been getting worse throughout the day. Do you want to put on your coat and go to the ED, or do you want to, you know, trek out to find a 24/7 emergency care, maybe urgent care center? Probably not. So now that we're all kind of in our homes more, we spend more time on our devices, we have a tool and technology that either your health system could access, maybe your health plan, that would give you the ability to go through a series of questions asking you about how you feel, asking you about the different symptoms that you have, and then providing you a differential diagnosis at the end, where it gives you the options of what might be happening based on how you're feeling. Maybe you have an ear infection. Maybe your eardrum is infected. It gives you different education and information to then route you to care. It might tell you you can self-care at home. You're going to get better in a little bit of time. You know, it might give you some pathways to help relieve that pain. Or it might say, call your doctor within 24 hours to schedule an appointment, or for very emergency situations, you know, call an ambulance or go to your local ED. We provide 5 different clinical care pathways at the end of that triage to help navigate those patients through maybe the resource they're using to the right care endpoint.
Sounds great. How's the feedback been so far in terms of improving that patient experience?
Yeah. So some of my favorite stats that we have revolve around engagement. So in my talks and in my conversations with our customers and prospects, I always refer back to the 3 E's that I think about when we're speaking to a customer or a partner. Number 1 is education. Did we educate the patient along the way? Did we give them the information they need to make an informed decision? The 2nd one is empowerment. Do they have those tools at their hands in order to go through the triage? And the last one is engagement. And are we engaging them at the right place at the right time? And we know by a lot of the studies that we're doing is there is a repeat usage based on the technology we're providing. So we've actually done a recent case study where with a customer where patients have actually scored an 8 out of 10 from satisfaction. And we know that 90% of the users who opted to use the AI triage were more likely to book an in-network visit versus those that don't. So we're starting to create and change some habit behavior and engagement behavior for those users that are leveraging these tools.
Fantastic. Speaking with Amanda Burry, Chief Commercial Officer at Informedica here on the Collective Voice of Health IT. AI seems to have just kind of exploded on the scene, and it's just been attaching itself to so many things in healthcare. From your perspective, where have you seen AI benefit the most? Question one. And question 1B, where would you see AI helping in healthcare where it hasn't actually been maybe implemented yet?
Yeah, great questions. And I think we also need to start maybe a little bit before 1-0 is the trust that patients need in order to adopt these tools. Mm-hmm. So we know that 4 out of 5 patients don't even know whether AI is used in a setting, and 2/3 are worried that the use of AI may lead to less face time with their healthcare provider, which you and I know is both already a very slim window. But you know, healthcare and AI has been used for many years, especially in clinical settings like radiology and imaging. For over 30 years, radiologists and imaging specialists have been using those tools to help detect stroke and different cardiovascular diseases. So AI algorithms in the clinical health space have been used for many years. I think where we see a lot of opportunity and growth is in areas where operationally or clinically, we are just falling short. We just don't have enough people. The workflows are pretty mundane. So in areas like documentation in areas like nurse triage centers or call centers. How can we help automate and advance some of those capabilities for patients to make the workflow more seamless and also more enjoyable and less burdensome on an actual person who might be on the other end of the line? So I think there's a lot of work for us to do and a lot of possibilities in the area of not replacing people, not removing people from jobs, but helping to support them with tools and technologies that make their jobs more efficient, more pleasant, and also more effective in that specific setting.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned kind of the trust issue. You mentioned the kind of the misconception of AI is going to take my jobs. What is, do you see, you know, working in AI, the secret sauce between leveraging AI where it kind of accomplishes what you want it to do, but also doesn't build upon that societal hesitancy that AI has sometimes brought, you know, kind of the, you know, I guess it's an education communication thing, but yeah, it's just this idea that it's going to take our jobs. Like I was joking with you before, Terminator 2, Skynet's active, you know, all sorts of craziness. How do you balance that development of AI as a need technology, but also understanding kind of that societal hesitancy?
Yeah, I think it comes from the companies that are implementing these technologies to really prioritize their responsible use of AI and innovation. So looking at this balance between innovation and ethical responsibility. So we see a lot of our customers and prospects putting together AI review boards, right? So internally, they're looking at what their bandwidth of risk is. And I think as we roll out these tools slowly, and it is going to be slow. It's not like we're just going to turn a switch one day and everything is going to become robotic within the hospital and health system. And, you know, a robot's going to be drawing your blood. I don't think we need to go to that extreme, but we need to think about where within those workflows and those pockets or pods of detail, we can start to get stakeholder buy-in. And I think if the clinicians embrace it, and if the messaging and the feeling and the vibe comes across that this is something that is acceptable by the medical or healthcare community, patients will start to adopt it on a case-by-case basis. In a last conversation, Michael, I used this idea of ATMs. So ATMs, you know, 20, 30 years ago, who would have thought you would have put a plastic card into a machine, typed in a number and some details, and it would give you money? Like, I remember driving through an ATM with my dad for the first time, and the look of worry on his face as he was putting his card into this machine. And I was like, "Dad, how much do you want to take out?" And he's like, "Oh, only $20. Like, again, low risk, low barrier, right? Like, $20. And he's like, "I can't believe this just happened." But there was a need that the financial industry was looking to fulfill because there was a lack of tellers, you know, brick and mortar's expensive. How could we make cash more accessible to everybody outside working hours? And I think if we kind of take that mindset into implementing some of these tools and technologies into things that affect health, I think we'll be more successful and have a more positive outcome as it relates on that message back to the patient.
Yeah, understanding the bigger picture. And that's a fantastic analogy with the banking. Amanda, this has been a fantastic conversation. Before I let you go, I'd like to give you the last word. Please plug whatever you'd like to our audience.
Yeah, so I think we all just need to be patient with each other as we embrace these new tools and technologies. The world is moving quicker than it ever has before. We're entering a new industrial revolution with AI and the Internet of Things and being more connected. And I think the reality is really happening today that we've been seeing over the course of the last 5 years. So I would say be patient. Be a sponge as it relates to reading and staying up to date on the different topics. And I think they make them less scary than to implement in real life scenarios.
Definitely. Definitely. This fantastic conversation with Amanda Burry, Chief Commercial Officer with Informedica. And this has been the Collective Voice of Health IT, a Weedy podcast, where the healthcare IT community connects, collaborates, and creates solutions for a better health system. Find all our episodes as well as information on our association at our website, wedi.org. Thank you for joining us, and be safe.